the best.
My friends at MyPillow, my buddy Mike Lindell told me he was coming out with a brand new product. It's called the new mattress topper. So I got the new mattress topper immediately, and I've been sleeping on it now for a couple of months. It's the best thing you've ever felt in your life. Now, you literally have MyPillow foam for support. It's a transitional foam that helps relieve pressure points, and it's ultra-soft, patented temperature-regulating cover. And I got to tell you, it has a 10-year warranty, a cover that's washable and dryable. It's made in the USA, backed by their 60-day unconditional money-back guarantee. Once you try this new mattress topper, you put it right over your mattress, you will never sleep better. And right now, you, my radio listeners, you're going to save 30% off when you go to MyPillow.com and use the promo code TOPPER. And by the way, Mike will also give you two standard MyPillows absolutely free. All right, so try MyPillow.com, promo code TOPPER. Promo code TOPPER for this great deal and the best night's sleep you ever had.
Sean Hannity is on now. This is how we roll.
We will close entry into the country for a period of time until we can get it under control.
The entire border?
The whole border. I mean the whole border.
I still don't think it's going to make a criminal case because collusion is not criminal.
When a man is tough, he's called effective.
I get some names called because if you're effective as a woman, then they have to undermine you because that's a real threat.
Holding them accountable. Sean gets the answers no one else does.
Freedom is back in style. Welcome to the revolution.
We burning down the night, shooting bullets at the moon, baby. This is how we roll.
Sean Hannity. The new Sean Hannity Show. More behind-the-scenes information on breaking news and more bold, inspired solutions for America. Coming up next, our final news roundup and information overload hour.
You cannot be civil with a political party that wants to destroy what you stand for, what you care about. That's why I believe if we are fortunate enough to win back the House and or the Senate, that's when civility can start again.
If you had to be stuck in an elevator with either President Trump, Mike Pence, or Jeff Sessions, who would it be?
Does one of us have to come out alive?
If you see anybody from that cabinet in a restaurant, in a department store, at a gasoline station, you get out and you create a crowd. And you push back on them. And you tell them they're not welcome anymore, anywhere.
Please don't just come here today and then go home. Go to the Hill today. Get up and... please, get up in the face of some Congress people.
Press always asks me, don't I wish I were debating him? No, I wish we were in high school. I could take him behind the gym.
But Michelle says that, you know, when they go low, we go high. No. When they go low, we kick them. That's what this new Democratic Party is about.
I hate that crowd. I hate that crowd.
Nielsen is in a Mexican restaurant of all places. Shame on you!
Shame! Shame! Shame!
Shame. Abolish ICE! Abolish ICE!
Yeah, brother. Yeah, you little white little
really?
Yeah. You're a little whitey, aren't you? The First Amendment, get the from.
Mr. White, I just wanted to call you this morning. I just want to let you know, when you find your face being eaten off by a leopard, that will be as a result of having voted for the leopard face-eating party. Here's hoping that you'll be happy with your gold-plated, so that everybody can come up and give it a big when you die at your funeral, because you'll have the kind of cash to pull that off, and that's really the important thing, right, Mr. White?
All right, news roundup, information overload hour, Sean Hannity Show. That was a voicemail. There was a piece the other day in the New York Times, how a liberal couple became two of New York's biggest Trump supporters, and tells the story about how these two people, Bill White, his husband, Brian Urey, are not red state evangelicals. They're not diehard right wingers. In fact, for years, they were key players among a a cohort that Mr. Trump loathes, Manhattan liberal elites. And Mr. Trump, being an unconventional commander-in-chief who ran an unorthodox campaign, which has unorthodox alliances. Anyway, this couple has now gone through so much, like that voicemail that you just heard, and attacks that you cannot believe that is chronicled in this article. And now I know Bill White, but how did I get to know you? I don't even remember.
How you doing, Sean? It's great to talk to you. Well, I think it was back when we were doing so much to help veterans, which you continue to do, and I can't thank you enough, and it's great to talk to you. And I can't thank you enough for what you're doing for our country, to save our country, with the president and his team, and everything that you're doing has just been inspiring to Brian and me, and it's an honor to talk to you always.
You know, and maybe, how did you go from being a liberal couple, part of, I'll use the term, Manhattan's liberal elite, whatever that means, and how did you why did you make the jump to Trump, and now one of his biggest, both of you biggest supporters? And how did that happen, and what has happened as a result of it?
Yeah, it's interesting, Paul. Part of it is because we watch your show every night, and I really mean that sincerely. I'm a patriot. I love my country. When we elect a president, he is my president. Whoever that person is the person that I respect, who I, you know was duly elected, and we get behind that person for the success of the country. You know, my main thing has been veterans all my life, and you know that, Sean, how much I care about our troops and our military and their families, and we're not doing enough for that community. So I knew Donald Trump for 30 years. You know, I went to him when the Veterans Day parade was in crisis, and he wrote me a check for $1 million. Everybody used to say, oh, he makes promises, he doesn't follow through. That's garbage. He wrote me a check on the spot for $1 million. Save the Veterans Day parade. When we launched the Celebrity Apprentice, we did it on the flight deck of the Intrepid. President, you know, now then Donald Trump lands. Piers Morgan is there, and the first winner was Piers Morgan. He gave the Intrepid Fallen Heroes Fund almost $2 million. And then when we built that physical rehab center that you and Don Imus, you know, remember Don, and you were so great with that. Donald Trump was a huge donor. So, I mean, I knew Donald for 30 years. I always liked him and respected him. He was always generous to the Intrepid and our veterans' causes. So, you know, he's a guy who gets things done. I always knew that. So it was an easy move for me because I'm a patriot and I want to support our president. I want him to be successful. And people just cannot believe that I am, you know, we are for him. And we are with him leading our country.
I don't even know where he stands on gay marriage. Where does he even stand on it? I honestly don't have a clue.
I mean, yeah, he's, well, first of all, you know, his son, Don Jr., who we become very close friends with, had us there. And we walked up to the president. He said, hey, you two handsome guys, get over here. Give us a hug, took a picture. The Trump tent is pretty big. The Trump tent is inclusive. The Trump tent welcomed us. You know, Mitt Romney wanted to have nothing to do with Bill White and Brian Ewer. And Donald Trump said to that Leslie Stahl interview, the first, you know, interview he did right after yours, when he was elected, was, that's the law of the land, and I'm not going to mess with it. And I believe him when he says that. You know, we don't like identity politics, but it's great that he supports us. He's been very sweet to
I think Brian most Americans are like me now, and that is, I think most people, we're so wrapped up in our own lives, let's be honest. I don't think people really give a flying rip about, you know, people's, you know, choices, personal life. It's none of our business. And you know what?
Exactly.
When I was in my 20s, I was an idiot, and I had a different opinion, and I realized how ignorant it was. I know, I'm just being honest. And
I don't think you're ever an idiot, Sean, but I can tell you.
No, I was,
thing,
but.
You know, okay.
And I will give you a lot of credit, too, because you're the former president of the, if you come to New York, you got to go see the Intrepid Sea, Air, and Space Museum in Manhattan. You were almost single-handedly credited for bringing that back from a financial collapse, and it's so important that you did that. I remember with my dad and the Intrepid, you know, many, many years ago. How many years has it been there now?
Oh, yeah, almost 30 years were coming up. It's so great. Did you go there with your dad, Sean?
I did. My dad fought in the Navy in World War II for 4 years in the Pacific.
Gosh.
And, you know, I was very proud of him. And I just, you know, and you look at how these ships are configured in the tiny spaces that these guys sleep in, and they're there for months and months and months. It is a real sacrifice, and for you to be able to preserve that and bring it back to its splendor is a huge accomplishment. Let me ask this. Could you even supported both of Hillary's runs for the White House? And, you know, and then you supported Barack Obama. Now you're supporting President Trump. Where do you stand politically? Because what I like about what the president is doing, these are principles I've always believed in, and that is the lowest taxes possible. You want to get rid of all the bureaucracy so businesses can build and thrive and create jobs for what I call the forgotten men and women that were that are in poverty on food stamps that need a ladder and a hand up. We got to get every American in a position where they can have a good life, a nice house, a nice car, a Disney vacation for their kids, that sort of thing. And that's what drives me. I don't think Obama's policies were successful, and I give out those statistics all the time. Yep. But Trump is successful.
No, you're right. I mean, the thing that the New York Times article did not point out, and where everybody seems, you know, to be critical, and I wanted to thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk today, because when I reached out to you, I really wanted to do this with you, Sean, because you are so so much of a patriot and an inspiration to Brian and me. The taxes being lowered, the job unemployment rate, how many trade deals we're working on, North Korea, helping the veterans, those two things that the president has done about being able to fire employees who do not belong working for veterans, the fact that they can go get a doctor's care instead of waiting online are things that, you know, we really support. The economy and GDP is phenomenal. Our taxes are lowered. I'm hiring more people at Constellations Group, my company. My husband's getting more clients because people are building and buying more insurance. And on top of it, the military's gotten a pay raise and they're being treated with respect. You know, I could give you 50 other things. You have this great screenshot of all the accomplishments that the president has made, promises kept. That's why we're supporting him. Hillary Clinton's second run, I mean, I had to bail out because she was driven so far to the left. I didn't know Donald was running for president. If I had known that, I think my choice would have been made a long time ago. And I'm so happy that I'm on the Trump train. This isn't getting me any more business, believe me. From the calls I've gotten and the abuse I've taken, I'm going to lose business. I'm going to lose income. And I'm okay with that because my country comes first, and I want to stand up for my president because I see that you do it. I can't imagine the hate mail that you get and the people that are mean and nasty. It's pretty awful what people have said to the two of us over the last 24 hours.
Listen, I get that every day, and I don't whine about it. I don't care about it, to be honest. It goes with the territory. But, you know, for people that don't get it every day, I find that usually is very, very hard and difficult and troubling for them. And, you know, I've actually tried to reach out to people in our industry sometimes when I see they're going through it. I'm like, okay, I'm in this 30 years. Trust me. It's welcome to the club. You're now in.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
But how are you dealing with it?
It's I got a tough spine. You know, I was a paramedic and I've seen some tough things in my life. I haven't been to war. So, you know, I don't ever complain about my life because I'm not getting shot at. So I have so much respect for our veterans, the people, you know, you and I care about, and I'm a patriot. So I'm going to help this president get reelected. I said in the paper, we're going to have a fundraiser for him for his 2020 reelection to keep America great. And I'm a man of my word. So I hope we're going to raise $5 million for him. It would be pretty amazing to have people of the community that, you know, really has rejected me. There's a lot of people like me and Brian out there who care about our country, and we're going to bring them to the forefront and help get Donald Trump reelected because he's a great guy, he's a great father, and he loves this country. And anybody who thinks different, hope they'll come
I just
around.
Think there's
I'm not going to convince them.
I look at, for example, who has created a better economic environment for African Americans, Hispanic Americans, Asian Americans, women in the workplace, et cetera? It's been this president's policies. And
and
if you look demographically, you know, maybe Republicans get 10-11% of the African American vote, higher percentage of the Hispanic vote. And to me, I just think that the more we include Americans in our plans for success, the better off. And Republicans, just stay away from, just solve problems that impact people's lives. That's all they need to do. And then get out of our way. I think the American people just need the hope and opportunity and the leg up. But I do feel bad for you. I mean, you know, I guess you've been called. What have you been called?
No, it's been pretty pretty bad. People have said that we're disgusting slimes. We've betrayed the gay and lesbian community. I mean, it's pretty wild, you know.
And by the way, those are all my friends. All my friends on the tolerant left. You know, I'll compare notes with you one day. I'll tell you what they call me. So.
Oh, gosh, Sean. Well, listen, I just want to thank you very much, and I really want to reiterate, I know you have a ton of people listening to you. They may not agree with me politically or, you know, in terms of, you know, some of the things that were said about me, but I just want to let you know that you inspire us every day with what you put out there and what you fight hard to get out in terms of the message, and we really appreciate you. We watch you every night. That's going to continue, and we're big fans of Sean Hannity. And thanks for helping the president.
Well, thank you for what. Listen,
we'll continue that.
You're a patriot, and that's all it is. We're, you know, at the end of the day, even if you're a Democrat and a liberal, you're still an American. It doesn't matter,
you,
you know. But boy, we have forgotten that part right now. And
God bless you,
everything is so personal, and it doesn't need to be this hard. It really doesn't need to be this personal. And people say, "Well, what about your president?" I'm like, "Yeah, well, the same guy that is fighting and battling." You know, a corrupt news media and a corrupt investigation is also the same guy that's fighting for better trade deals, fighting to protect our borders, fighting to bring companies and jobs back to America, fighting enemies that had been threatening the world like little Rocket Man and keeping promises to allies like Israel and making Jerusalem the capital and degrading ISIS. Nobody ever gives him credit for those things.
Yes,
so,
yes, sir.
You know, to me, those are the big picture items: safety, security, opportunity, prosperity. That's what matters.
Right.
And then everyone else, it's up to them.
Prosperity and the economy. Do you not like? Right. Amen to that.
Yeah. All right. Well, Bill White, thanks so much.
John, God bless you, sir.
My best to you and to Mr. Urey, and you guys are welcome on any time.
Thank you, Sean. We love you. Have a great day. God bless America, and thank you so much for what you're doing, Sean. We're behind you.
You too. God bless you. Sorry you're going through all that. 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program.
The forgotten man is forgotten no more. This is the Sean Hannity Show.
One thing that is not political, it's smoking. That's about people. And there are 34 million Americans now that smoke. But for many, there's not been a clear alternative. Juul, for me, has been a game changer. I watch people all the time. They go outside in the middle of the freezing winter just to have their smoke. You don't have to do that anymore because of Juul. Now, people don't have to worry about the smell on your hands. Juul was specifically designed by smokers for smokers to be a satisfying alternative. It's a clean technology. Juul has no ash, no odor, no mess. If you're one of those 34 million adults who do smoke, you now know there's an alternative to cigarettes and cigars. Just go to Juul, JUUL.com/SwitchAmerica. That's JUUL.com/SwitchAmerica. Now, this product does contain nicotine, and nicotine is an addictive chemical. But just go to Juul, JUUL.com/SwitchAmerica. Right, you've heard me talk about SimpliSafe Home Security every week on the show. Been doing it for years. It's simple. Just go to SimpliSafeHannity.com for the special holiday offer going on right now. This offer ends soon. It's SimpliSafeHannity.com, SimpliSafeHannity.com. All right, we got to take a break here. Don't forget, we have Hannity tonight, a busy Hannity, 9 Eastern on the Fox News Channel. And we have a great lineup. We're going to be joined by Lindsey Graham, Senator Secretary of Homeland Security Nielsen, Joe DiGenova, Herman Cain, and much more. That's happening 9 Eastern tonight, Hannity on Fox. When we come back, Eric Bolling about his event with Melania Trump. You are listening to the best of the Sean Hannity Show, and stay tuned. More memorable moments, interesting guests, and a lot of fun coming up next. right, that's going to wrap things up for today. Now, we're going to put that Eric Bolling event, when it happens tomorrow, on Hannity.com. Tonight on Hannity, the Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen will join us. Also, Senator Lindsey Graham tonight. Joe DiGenova, Sarah Carter will have the latest on the caravan. And, of course, update you on the election results out of Mississippi. And Herman Cain, bunch more. 9 Eastern tonight, Hannity on Fox. We'll see you then and back here tomorrow. Thanks for being with us. This is the best of the Sean Hannity Show. Don't forget, stay tuned for more right after the latest news right here on this radio station.
Now, back to the best of Sean Hannity.
These are not crimes. He has no authority to be a roving commissioner to find political sins.
The president continues to dangle a pardon for Paul Manafort, which only adds to the growing body of evidence that the president is engaged in obstructing justice.
They lied. That's a consciousness of guilt, and I think that is pretty clear collusion.
Holding them accountable. Sean gets the answers no one else does.
Freedom is back in style. Welcome to the revolution.
We burning down the night, shooting bullets at the moon, baby. This is how we roll.
Sean Hannity. The new Sean Hannity Show. More behind-the-scenes information on breaking news and more bold, inspired solutions for America.
All right, hour two, Sean Hannity Show, 800-941-SEAN, if you want to be a part of the program. You know, I've been chronicling how, you know, here we have all of these people that, you know, you have people in the press just decimate them every single day, presidents in particular. And then all of a sudden, you know, the people that were the meanest, the toughest, the most unfair person passes away. Now, all of a sudden, you know, they'll say the nicest things, but then they'll sidetrack and then they'll use characteristics that they can use about the person that just died that they never really liked anyway or never said that they liked, that just the opposite. And they'll use it to go after the new guy that they hate. You know, is that it? We only get nice words when we die, not when we're actually living. Politics is that prominent in our lives. Anyway, that's happened with John McCain more recently and also in the case of George Herbert Walker Bush. You know, now it's like, okay, well, at least he was nice. But Donald Trump, forget it. Let me just play just a few of the highlights of the media's nonstop, never-ending destroy Trump mentality.
Better be ready for the fact that he might be leading the Republican ticket next.
I know you don't believe that, but I want to go on.
Sorry, I understand why so many people voted for him. I understand where you were coming from. I understand why you liked him. But this man is lying to you.
Donald Trump is a president with whom there is grave question about his fitness and ability to conduct the office of the president.
I'll say it again. This Russian connection just keeps building, and every time it builds and expands, you have to wonder if Trump himself isn't worried about what's swirling around under the covers.
The entire world's watching, and of course, most importantly, Vladimir Putin's watching. It seemed like yesterday was his love note to Vladimir Putin.
It is certainly an unusual speech, a weird speech, Rocket Man insulting Kim Jong-un.
Yes, I have thought an awful lot about blowing up the White House.
Of course I want to punch him in the face.
Right.
16 tweets today to start the new year, some of them deeply disturbing. These are the messages from a person who is not well.
He said he's in excellent health. I mean, Sanjay Gupta came out and was like, so sure about excellent health.
President Trump is goading Kim Jong-un to test a nuclear missile again, to prove its reliability, to show him wrong.
The Stormy saga takes a dramatic turn as the porn star speaks out on her alleged affair with citizen Trump.
Any previous president, if you'd woken up to this all caps tweet threatening war with Iran, you'd think he probably belongs in a padded cell. But with Trump, this is kind of business as normal.
All right, we could literally go on an entire program here and play one more insane cut after the other, and the obsession, and it's every second, every minute, every hour of every day. You know, Piers Morgan joins us. He's the head of the Daily Mail UK. He's also a big TV star in what's the name of your morning show? The Wake Up Morning Show you're doing?
Yeah, Good Morning Britain is called.
Good Morning.
You can wake up in Britain, and you'll see my smiling head.
Who needs espresso when you got Piers Morgan waking you up in the morning and coming out with something that's bound to piss at least half of Great Britain off on any given day?
Exactly.
You know, you wrote a piece about this, though, back in August, and it's still apropos today, how the media is playing what you described as a dangerous role, riding the lines between opinion and fact, and, you know, this poetic license that they take, and jumping to conclusions, and advancing conspiracy theories with no evidence. It's pretty bad. And they all say they're journalists. I say I'm a talk show host. So they claim to be journalists. That's the biggest problem to me.
Yeah, I think the problem is that there is huge money to be made from Trump bashing. It's as simple as that. And whether you're at CNN or MSNBC, or you're doing one of the late night shows, or you're editing the New York Times, or you're a liberal celebrity who has a very liberal audience, there is a lot of money, a huge commercial imperative to be as anti-Trump as you can possibly be. And it drives their news judgment. It warps their news judgment. You know, when I'm in America, which I come over quite regularly, I'm staggered by just how partisan supposedly impartial news organizations have become. And the only reason they're doing it is because it's commercially beneficial. And I think that is a real problem. And it's really at the heart of, I think, Donald Trump's fury about fake news. He's not saying everything they do is fake. What he's saying is a lot of the hysteria, a lot of the ridiculous wall-to-wall 24/7 treatment of every tweet and everything he says, and everything is always twisted into, you know, this guy's the worst guy in the world because that's what makes some money and appeals to their audience. That, in a way, when you add it all together, becomes fake news. It does. And I say that as a journalist who just is concerned by that. And I think that Donald Trump, if he took away the tweets, and you and I have discussed before that some of his tweets are probably a little too inflammatory and he goes after too many people. And, you know, there's a side to Donald Trump where if you punch him, he'll punch you 10 times back. And maybe as president, he should just rein that back in a bit. I would like him to. But there's no doubt that he has come under more attack than any president that there's ever been. It's 90% negative. It's relentless. And if you did remove, actually, the rhetoric and the tweets from Donald Trump's administration so far, I think if this was another president, say it was George Herbert Walker Bush, who had achieved what Trump has achieved in 2 years, then you would have to say he's made a very successful start in many areas, both on the international stage.
But here's
the US
I slightly disagree on that last point, and that is, there's such an ideological divide, and you have it in your country. It's fairly common.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
There will never be an acknowledgement that he does anything good. I would contend.
Well, it might come, Sean. It might come in, you know, 25 years.
No, everything comes
with George Bush.
Listen, I don't think. By the way, if anyone, when I ever pass away, and all the people that I know hate me, don't lie. Just say what you said when I was alive. Just, and I'm sure you would prefer honesty too.
I will say I like you because I do like you. And
well,
I think
I've always liked you too. Now that I've gotten to know you,
you're
a riot.
I think you're honest about what you stand for and what your opinions are. It's the ones who are doing it purely because, not because they particularly believe it, but because they know it's making them tons of money. That's where I have a problem. That's where supposedly serious news organizations, I think, have had their news judgment warped by the lust to Trump bash 24/7 and make tons of money. And I think it's a real problem.
You knew Donald Trump from The Apprentice. You actually won The Apprentice in a tough year. What was your personal relationship like with him? And do you see the qualities you saw then in him now? Because one thing I think I've noticed in him, and I've known him, you know, a couple of decades now, is that I see that he has really grown into the job.
I agree.
And his growth trajectory, I think I'm being objective, has been fairly phenomenal.
And actually, I think, funny enough, even in the last 48 hours, I think the way that he's responded to George Bush's death has been really interesting. You know, everyone knows they didn't get on. Everyone knows that Donald Trump's been feuding with the Bushes ever since he ran for president. In fact, before that, I've interviewed him in the past where he's been very critical of George W. Bush and his presidency. He then went after Jeb Bush, obviously low-energy Jeb and so on. And we know that George H.W. Bush was no fan of Trump and, in fact, voted for Hillary Clinton. So the normal Donald Trump response would have been rather like his response to John McCain's death, pretty scathing and probably not engaged at all. In fact, he's gone very presidential in the way that many people would like him to be at moments like this. And I'm actually glad to see that, Sean, because the Trump that I knew from Celebrity Apprentice and have known really since then for 12 years has a very warm and decent and charming side to him. I think for whatever reason, and I understand some of the reasons, he's hidden that away as president, as a candidate. He's preferred to be on the front foot, punching away, being very aggressive, being very tough, taking no nonsense. But I do think since the midterms, I've noticed a slight pivot in him where I think, for example, over the California fires, his immediate gut response was to go on the attack blaming people. And actually, all he had to do was the easy bit of being president, just be there for the people who were burning to death. Have the debate about forests and so on later, but just in that moment, be presidential. And there are moments when you just need to do that. And I think over the death of George Herbert Walker Bush, he's been presidential. Yeah, and he did do it. And I think that you know, I think he is, as you say, he's learning and evolving on the job. I think he's getting better at the job. I think he gets a very unfair rap. I like him very much personally. He's been very loyal to me over the years, gone out of his way to be loyal to me. And I think a lot of what he's been doing, whether it's standing up to Iran, whether it's standing up to China over trade, which has been a disgraceful situation for decades involving America's trade relationship with the Chinese, whether it's forging a peace with North Korea, whether it's demanding that NATO members pay their due. I think there are lots of things he's doing which are very interesting, very unusual for an American president, and actually he's right. So I think that he gets a completely skewed and relentlessly negative treatment from much of the media, which bears little relation to the reality. A lot of it is because he's very abrasive and combative with them. But if you look at him objectively, I think you would have to say after 2 years, Trump is delivering on many of the things he promised he'd do. And whether you agree with that or not, you have to accept he's probably achieved more in 2 years than most presidents have ever achieved in their first 2 years.
I think that it's a blessing and a curse scenario because I would view or describe him as a disruptor. And he is somebody that has literally shaken the bureaucracy, what I would often refer to as the deep state, to its core. And it needed it. You know, Republicans, I'm not a Republican. I'm a conservative. A lot of people think I'm a Republican because I usually end up supporting the Republican president because I don't believe in socialism. And that represents the modern Democratic Party. But I would say he is a disruptor. He is somebody that when he goes in to negotiate, he goes in hard. He telegraphed all of these strategies in the art of the deal. And be it NATO, you know, saying that America shouldn't pay 72 cents of every dollar and Angela Merkel ought not be helping to make Putin and Russia rich again by making, you know, energy deals with them. He was right about that. He's getting better trade deals with our European allies, with Canada and Mexico. We now have progress being made with China. And yeah, you're right on the Iranian deal, North Korea. Mm-hmm. He's a force. He is a force that has to be dealt with.
He's a wrecking ball, isn't he?
But in a good way, I think. Yeah.
Well, I think in many ways in a good way. And I think that he is. It has been really interesting to me to watch him in the last 2 days. I really think he's reacted in a way that he wouldn't instinctively have reacted to the death of George H.W. Bush. Right round to giving him giving the plane, to going down there and paying respects to. And I think the Bush family, to their credit, have invited him. And I think that is good to see. You know, we do at some stage, I think, in America, Sean, there needs to be a coming together, right? There needs to be a move by one side. And it can be very intransigent. Both sides get very stuck in their ways, very partisan, and say, it's their fault, it's my, and so on.
But people say this, but let me ask you the practicality of that. When, either you believe in secure borders or you believe in eliminating borders and getting rid of ICE, either you believe in lower taxes, less bureaucracy, or you want to redistribute the wealth. Again, you either believe in a philosophy that would drop $150 billion in cash and other currency on the tarmac in Iran for the mullahs that chant death to America, or you put in the trade sanctions that's absolutely going to squeeze their economy so tight that they're capable of being of a collapse from within. I don't know how you reconcile what are the differences. Well, hang on one second. We got a break. More with Piers Morgan. If you're just joining us, he is the head of the Daily Mail UK, also hosts Wake Up Grape. So what's that thing on your to-do list that you keep avoiding? Maybe is it going to the gym, getting new tires, cleaning the basement? You know, it's funny how home security is kind of like that. You know you need it. You've got an amazing family. You got a nice home. You want to protect it. But there's always maybe something holding you back. Maybe it's the idea of just paying somebody else or scheduling a six-hour installation window. Who has time for this? Well, our friends at Simply Safe Home Security, they have gotten rid of all of the reasons not to get a home security system today. Now, they are the great guys in the home security business. No installation fee, no contract to sign, no markups, professional quality, 24-hour professional monitoring. And guess what? You'll save hundreds of dollars right now on your Simply Safe system with their extended holiday sale. SimplySafe.com/Sean to get this great offer today, the best ever. SimplySafe.com/Sean. But hurry, this holiday sale ends on January the 8th. SimplySafe.com/Sean.
The radio show the mainstream media loves to hate. This is the Sean Hannity Show.
And as we continue, Piers Morgan is with us. He is the head of the Daily Mail UK. We left off. How does America reconcile a modern democratic party that, from my perspective, and it's not, it's very similar to what you see in Britain. And that is you have Labour, right?
Yep.
And
yep.
then you've got a conservative movement, a conservative party.
And they're torn completely apart over an issue like Brexit. But here's what I would say.
What's going to happen with that?
Well, I think it's very intractable. It's a total mess. And both sides have dug into positions where there's no point of agreement. And that's very similar to what we see over Trump in America. But I do think that what is incumbent on everyone in America is to try and find points of agreement. And where they can find it is where you stop the hypocrisy. And this is my real issue about the way that Trump is treated certainly by many Democrats and many liberal celebrities. They are rankly hypocritical. Take, for example, the issue of illegal immigration, right? Obama was known as the deporter in chief. He deported over 3 million illegal immigrants from America, an all-time record by any president. And yet you ask any liberal in America or in Britain if they know how many people he deported, they haven't got a clue. They weren't interested. They didn't care. They had no thought, actually, for what he was doing. And, you know, there may be very good reasons for every deportation he did. But let's not pretend that somehow Barack Obama was not very, very tough on illegal immigration, because he was. And I think that that's where, surely, an honest broker on the Democrat side could say, you know what, actually, we agree with a lot of what
he sounded like Donald Trump back in the day, to be blunt.
Exactly.
I play that.
Yeah, as did Hillary Clinton.
And by the way,
Hillary Clinton, as did Bill Clinton. They've all talked up on this. And so this idea that somehow it's just Trump who's being tough. You know, there was actually an incident, I'm sure you've covered this, in 2013 at the very same border point involving 100 migrants storming the border and being repelled with a form of tear gas.
Pepper spray and tear gas. Yeah, well,
right.
I think I'm the only person to report that, know that even besides you. Piers, always a pleasure. We really appreciate you being with us.
Thanks,
love to have you on anytime you're available, and wish you a Merry Christmas and a great holiday season for you and your family.
And you, Sean. All the very best. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Thank you, sir.
You are listening to the best of the Sean Hannity Show, and stay tuned. More memorable moments, interesting guests, and a lot of fun coming up next. More of the best of the Sean Hannity Show coming up.
Be sure to check in as soon as you get to your car after work for breaking information you need to know about. This is the Sean Hannity Show.
Volunteering to serve in World War II, as I was going on to serve as an ambassador, CIA director, congressman, vice president, president, a whole life of public service. Donald Trump has been a life of service to himself.
They both believe that the presidency is bigger than themselves, which is not something that this president always adheres to.
But I think this is also a 24 hours of nostalgia about what leadership used to look like in this country.
There's a great clip from 1980. When George H.W. Bush is challenged on his how tough he is, and he talks about toughness is about having values and standing for them, being principles. Toughness is not attacking.
As a candidate, he said, those who think we're powerless to do anything about the greenhouse effect are forgetting about the White House effect. And then he signed into law the Clean Air Act Amendment of 1990, one of the most sweeping environmental statutes ever.
Yeah.
This president that we have now is trying to unravel everything that he did and Obama did. And
can
the
we
fact
focus
that,
on the president, please? I don't want to talk about Trump. We're honoring a great president
in the past. Please, I want to talk about
but
the different
honoring, but I'm not interested in your one issue.
I don't care what you're interested in. I'm talking.
Well, I don't care what you're interested in.
We'll
either,
be right back.
Boy.
All right, 24 now to the top of the hour. 800-941-SEAN. Our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program? Cheryl Atkinson is with us. She hosts her own show on Sinclair Media called Full Measure on Sundays. She's the author of the New York Times bestseller, The Smears and Stonewalled. And I read a column by you about, it was thick, all the examples you had listed of all the times, Cheryl, the media has misreported, lied to the American people as it relates to Donald Trump. It sounds like it would be the definitive book called Fake News, if you will.
What was remarkable to me when I started compiling the examples was I was looking for other examples, too, like mistakes that came out that happened to be in favor of Trump, but there weren't any. I mean, there may still be some. Maybe I haven't seen them all, but all of them coincidentally were mistakes that hurt Trump or were intended to hurt Trump, and also mistakes by some of the formerly most well-respected news organizations in the world, making Bush League junior mistakes that wouldn't be tolerated in journalism school, but usually with pretty much total impunity.
Give me some of the best or worst examples that kind of shocked you.
I think one of the most definitive, because it set the stage and the tone, was the Time Magazine reporter that on the day of President Trump's inauguration falsely reported that he had removed the bust statue of Martin Luther King from the Oval Office.
Yeah, that was a doozy.
Never happened.
That was a doozy.
But the origin of that mistake was the reporter not even doing the basic due diligence that we learn we're required to do in journalism school, and I don't even think you have to be taught this, to check your facts. If you think you see something missing or you hear it, you call and ask. And someone would have immediately told him that it was still there. He just didn't see it. And they had to issue a correction because that went worldwide. Of course, the correction never travels quite so far as the original misreporting.
No, the reporting reporting is on A1. The correction is on page 837 in the left-hand bottom corner with the tiniest print they could ever make up.
And in today's terms, the mistake is circulated. It goes viral on Twitter, and the correction is not seen.
You know, I've been doing now for over a year and a half, and I have a ensemble cast that has been helping us. And tonight we have a very explosive report as it relates to a series of email chains have now been discovered, and in them, without giving away all the details of this, top officials knowingly knew that they never verified what turned out to be the lying dossier of Christopher Steele. But it didn't stop them from using the bulk of the information from that unverified, uncorroborated, bought and paid for Russian propaganda of Hillary. It didn't stop them from committing a fraud on a FISA court, but not only once, four separate times in their FISA court applications. They also purposely withheld the origination of such a report, and they held it out as if they had gone through proper protocol and procedures and vetting, and that they had verified it and corroborated it, and they never did. And these are many of the top name people you would know. And I'm just sitting back and I'm watching that. If you or I committed a fraud like that on the court, I think we'd probably be looking at serious jail time.
Why doesn't the court care? I think you put your finger on something that people don't understand, I think, widely how important it is, because there's something I've written about, and I was tipped off to this by someone in the intel agencies, called Woods Procedures. These were instituted in 2001 because of abuses and material presented to the FISA court that said, from that point on, this information, every fact presented to the FISA court, must be personally verified by the FBI, not just in a secondhand way or through media reports, personally investigated and verified. And if a single fact is not verifiable, they have to go back to the drawing board. They're not allowed to go to the court. This seems to me on its face to have violated what is a very, very serious rule and perhaps a criminal violation inside the Justice Department that nobody seems to care about. But that was instituted in 2001 under, by the way, Mueller, when he was head of the FBI.
How is it possible? I mean, you were closer, more of a more in the mainstream media than I've ever been. You know, it's funny. People ask me all the time, although they'll make a statement. Well, you're not a journalist. And I say, well, I don't view my job description as being a journalist. I think I'm a talk show host. But under the banner of being a talk show host, Cheryl, I can give you hours and hours of radio and television coverage where I was a straight news reporter. In other words, I just report the facts about a story that's unfolding. That's part of my job, a big part of my job. We've done investigative reporting on, for example, Obama's radical ties prior to the election in 2008. And most of those stories, the media wouldn't go near. They wouldn't even touch them. You know, imagine that he starts his career in the homes of Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn, and he only got asked one time, and it only happened because George Stephanopoulos was on my radio show the day before, and I said, what are you going to ask him about Ayers and Dorn? He said, who are they? He had never heard of them. You know, or the same with the deep state investigation, which I know you have also done some work on, but we've been able to discover a lot of information about the server that Hillary Clinton did have classified and top secret information on it. And we do now have pretty well confirmed that it was hacked by at least six foreign intelligence services, that in spite of what James Comey said, that they were writing an exoneration in early May. He was doing it with Peter Strzok before they interviewed her in early July and before they exonerated her. And in the meantime, they had changed the legal standard from gross negligence to extreme carelessness. And then we know that they immediately began the witch hunt into Donald Trump with no reason whatsoever to go forward. But they ignored that Hillary bought and paid for a Russian dossier by funneling money through a law firm to an op research group to a foreign national. I didn't think foreign nationals was supposed to impact our elections. And that he got all this Russian dirt, supposedly, on Donald Trump. It's known as the dossier. That information was disseminated to the American people. It was used as the bulk, according to the Grassley Graham Nunes memos, the bulk of information to obtain FISA warrants against a Trump campaign associate, and then later used as a media leak strategy to bludgeon and delegitimize Trump because they had this plan, this insurance policy in place. Now, that sounds a lot worse than General Flynn, who served his country 33 years and 5 years in combat, doesn't it?
Well, it does, and I've become convinced, based on the evidence that's come out in the past year and a half, that there is something you can either call, you know, procedure, narrative, or I think an operation that was conducted and has been conducted that involves the news media, using the news media, that involves leaks, that involves foreign intelligence, that involves our own intelligence, surveillance, and all kinds of things, designed to controversialize this president and those around him and to keep him, in particular, General Flynn, who was going to look at alleged surveillance abuses inside the intel community that occurred in recent years, to keep them from getting close to that. And it's been very successful in those terms, because anytime President Trump suggests getting close to digging around or looking at some of these alleged abuses, they can cry obstruction and do, whether it is or not. And was that part of the insurance policy they discussed in advance? So I think all of these things are coming together in a pretty clear way that you would be hearing more about if the tables were turned party-wise. The media would be digging into and putting together.
All we need is one attorney general that believes in equal application of our laws and equal justice under the law. Because if we do, then all of these things will be investigated and all of these things will be prosecuted. And General Flynn, who was speaking to his soon-to-be Russian counterpart after the election, does not represent any collusion of any kind. But meanwhile, this guy lost his house, couldn't afford the lawyers involved. And he now, you know, may face a little jail time. It doesn't look like it, but I hope to God not. But a year of his life is gone. You were involved in your memoir. You recalled that a source connected to a government agency implicated a sophisticated entity that used commercial, non-attributable spyware that is proprietary as a to a government agency, either the CIA, the FBI, Defense Intelligence Agency, or National Security Agency in a breach, and you're suing the Justice Department of the Obama years of illegally surveilling your computers and seeking $35 million in damage. By the way, the information that they got on General Flynn was obtained illegally. How is your case going?
Well, we're still in there 4 years later, which is itself an accomplishment because, as you may know, the government enjoys all kinds of automatic immunities. And they've been fighting this case still under Trump, same people as did under Obama, the Justice Department, fighting using your tax dollars and kind of trying to bleed me dry and avoid discovery. You know, we need discovery to get the names of the people who were involved in this operation, which has been confirmed with parts of five different forensics exams. But we can't get the names if they won't agree to discovery. And instead of launching their own criminal investigation, which is what the Justice Department ought to have done long ago into these intrusions, which are confirmed, they're defending the intruders in court. So there is, you may know, no press groups stepped forward, no civil liberties groups stepped forward to assist in the case. And when some attorneys found out that recently, when I spoke at a fourth surveillance abuse conference to some lawyers, they started a Fourth Amendment litigation fund for me. And, you know, because this has become extremely expensive. So there is a GoFundMe related to it. And we're going to keep going as long as we can. We have oral arguments now scheduled, which is positive, for late January in this case to try to get discovery.
If we allow the abuse of the powerful tools of intelligence that we entrust to our intelligence community to turn them on the American people like this, and this is when you were investigating issues like Benghazi and some other things, then we're no better than the former Soviet Union in any way. All right, more with Cheryl Atkinson on the other side of this. We'll put that GoFundMe link up on our website, Hannity.com, straight ahead.
Final Hour Roundup is next. You do not want to miss it. And stay tuned for the Final Hour free-for-all on The Sean Hannity Show.
Cheryl Atkinson, 800-941-SEAN is our number. So you were able to get some attorneys that took on your case, and you now know for a fact that within the government, they illegally surveilled, unmasked, and then leaked raw intelligence on him. And in your case, it's pretty much the same thing. You now you have all the evidence, forensic evidence, that one of these agencies' systems were put on your computer and you were hacked for the purpose of your government getting the information that you were producing on topics they didn't like covered. Is that correct?
It is. And I think, you know, my case came out, CBS announced the remote intrusion a few months after we had discovered them internally and started investigating them. But my case happened, we discovered it with the help of some intel insiders before Edward Snowden, before Clapper gave misinformation to Congress, before we knew the government had spied on AP and Fox News. So it seemed so incredible at the time, but now it's important, not because of me, because I know it's important to me, but why should it be important to other people? It was a symptom of this entire system of surveillance abuses going on that they are now trying not to let us dig into, which is why I think, at least partly why they did what they did to Trump and his associates. So my case figures in very prominently in that whole alleged cover-up of what these agencies have been doing for years, including, by the way, under Mueller, who's now investigating it. And I'm not saying he's not an honest broker. I don't know him. I know people who like him. I know people who like him less. But he was in charge of the FBI when some of these things were happening. So, you know, it's all very twisted and tied up together.
I've had people on this program say that every phone call, every text, every email is metadata stored. Now, these are guys that were involved in the system. I've never been able to confirm it myself, but it sounds a little 1984-ish to me. But in your case, you actually have hard evidence that you were specifically targeted and they were using the powerful tools of intelligence that we entrust to them. We'll continue to follow it. Cheryl Atkinson, thanks so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Sean.
All right, 800-941-SEAN. You want to be a part of the program. Listen, my friends at MyPillow have done it again. The best pillow you'll ever use in your life. You'll fall asleep faster. You'll stay asleep longer. It'll change your life forever in a great way. Well, now they've come up with the MyPillow Mattress Topper. 800-919-6090 or MyPillow.com. Promo code Hannity for the all-new MyPillow Mattress Topper. You are listening to the best of The Sean Hannity Show. Don't forget, catch The Sean Hannity Show weekdays right here on this station. And stay tuned for more right after the latest news.
The best of Sean Hannity is on now.
Michael Cohen, he's a weak person, and what he's trying to do is get a reduced sentence. So he's lying about a project that everybody knew about.
This is a political witch hunt.
The next 2 years are about setting up for the election in 2020 and dividing, in my view, the Republican Party and Donald Trump from the base of the Republican Party.
Holding them accountable. Sean gets the answers no one else does.
Freedom is back in style. Welcome. The revolution.
We burning down the night, shooting bullets at the moon, baby. This is how we roll.
Sean Hannity. The new Sean Hannity Show. More behind-the-scenes information on breaking news and more bold, inspired solutions for America.
All right, hour two, Sean Hannity Show. Happy Friday. Glad you're with us. Write down our toll-free number. It's 800-941-SEAN. You want to be a part of the program. So we've been following the border, and you go back to the election, the news media, Barack Obama out campaigning. This is just to racially inspire those racist Republicans to vote, et cetera, et cetera. No, that's never been what it was about. And now we have a real crisis. 7,000 an estimated so many people in Tijuana. It's now developing into a massive humanitarian crisis. Medical supplies are needed greatly for things like TB and other diseases, which, by the way, I think the U.S. should probably help the people. And the bigger problem is that Mexican officials and our own Department of Homeland Security have identified over 600 people that have infiltrated the migrant caravan community, if you will. And there's been assault, sexual assault and other going on throughout the time that the walking and the caravan has been moving. And anyway, the most important thing, 600 people that we've identified as criminals. There's a Daily Caller piece out today. The media never misses a chance to try and paint illegal migrant border crashes as sympathetic, hardworking families, you know, women and children, when the vast majority of people are actually men. And for every, you know, all the thousands, I'm sure the vast majority of people that want what we often take for granted, which is a better life and opportunity for themselves and their kids. And the problem is there is this report of an illegal alien pleading guilty Wednesday of this week of raping and murdering an Islamic teen last year in a horrifying case near a mosque in Fairfax County, Virginia. Darwin Martinez Torres, 25, pled guilty, capital murder and rape, 17-year-old Nabra Hassana. And part of the deal allows him to avoid the death penalty in exchange for a life sentence behind bars. And Martinez Torres is an illegal alien from El Salvador, a suspected member of the notorious MS-13 street gang. According to the Daily Mail, prosecutors laid out the crime in chilling detail. And we had a recent case of a young teacher that was killed by an illegal immigrant in Texas last weekend. And in that case, he had already been arrested for a violent crime, and we didn't deport the person. Now this young teacher is dead. And people talk about family separation. Well, you can't use tear gas. Well, what are you supposed to do when people are pelting bottles, rocks, and other projectiles at our border patrol and trying to crash down gates and enter the country illegally? Senator Lindsey Graham is with us. Senator, how are you? How was your Thanksgiving?
It was good. I hope you had a good one.
You know what we do, which is really, I got a butterball turkey fryer. No, I swear. So, like, take a 15-pound turkey. How long do you think it takes to cook that?
4 hours.
No, 45 minutes.
Oh, okay.
You just drop it down in peanut oil. It's over in 45 minutes. It's the juiciest turkey. Now, turkey's usually dry when you're done cooking. It's like you can't baste it. You baste it, it has the skin on it. It's not going to penetrate the skin anyway. But it comes out steep, moist, delicious, the best turkey you ever had.
Well, you've just talked to the guy that can't boil water, and I'm much better for having learned all that.
Oh, come on. What are you going?
You
can't boil water. You can't make spaghetti?
No.
Seriously? You can't fry an egg?
I'm a danger to myself and others in the kitchen. But I'm glad that you're good at what you do on the radio as well as doing frying turkeys. Speaking of turkeys, let's talk about the Democratic response to the caravan.
Yeah, pretty bad. Well, Chuck Schumer, I guess, got pressure from the left wing of his party for even talking about funding the border wall. And he says, well, maybe we'll just put up a fence. A fence isn't going to stop anybody.
Here's a moment in time for President Trump to drive home the point he's been making for 2 years, that something's got to change. And let's start with a caravan. If you do not deter this caravan, you got 10 more coming. If you don't get it now that people are trying to overrun our border, take advantage of our laws, you're never going to get it. So, President Trump, stand your ground. I'm for fixing a broken immigration system. But who is going to allow us to fix this broken immigration system unless you can prove to them you won't have 11 million 20 years from now? And that's what the caravan's about.
It's always been, in my mind, secure the border first.
Yeah.
And we never, you know how you always, for example, you make these spending deals, you and your friends in Washington, and we always get the tax increase right away, and then the spending cuts, we never get the deal never happens,
right?
You know,
right?
So we'd get the amnesty, but we're not going to get the wall.
Well, so that's what Reagan did. Reagan gave 3 million people amnesty. We never did the border. We never controlled employment through Ear Verify. We never increased legal immigration, so people don't have to cheat. The one thing I can tell you for sure is if you can't prove to the public that you won't have a third wave by being fair to the 11 million already here, you're never going to get a deal. To Democrats who want to fix a broken immigration system, when you ignore the problems created by the caravan, when you make light of the fact that our laws are broken and enticing people to come here illegally, when you criticize President Trump for doing the same thing President Obama did on the border to protect us, then you're making a huge mistake.
You know, Senator, there's two ideas out there that I think I like. The president so far has been given, what, $3.5 billion, if I'm not correct, for the border wall.
Right.
And there's progress made. The estimate is we need a total of 25. There's two proposals out there. One is if Republicans decide to stick together, they could use the reconciliation process and in the Senate, which would mean that you only need 50 votes. Mike Pence would be the tiebreak. And that we could get full funding of the wall. If not, the president has said he would take $5 billion as a down payment and negotiate the actual building of the wall himself, meaning it's not going to be waste, fraud, and abuse. He's going to get somebody to give him a good deal.
Right. So Ted Cruz has been pushing this idea. Count me in. We need to do it before the new Congress because we're going to lose the House.
Are you talking about the reconciliation?
Reconciliation. So count me in. Again, I've been beat up for trying to solve immigration, but people never understood where I'm coming from. I want to fix it so we don't have 11 million 20 years from now. I don't want to do a phony deal. I want to do a real deal, and it starts with border security. If you can't control the border, you're going to have 11 million more 20 years from now. So I think Ted Cruz's idea is a smart idea. Let's go ahead and appropriate the entire $25 billion in the next 10 days.
I love it. Will Mitch McConnell do it?
Do you think
it would pass? Where are your fellow senators? Because we really can't afford to lose any. I mean, and you're kind of friends with everybody.
We won't know till they vote. So the bottom line is that the Democratic Party is missing an opportunity to work with us to give public confidence that we all see the same movie. The most people in this country have no animosity toward immigrants in general. We'll be fair to illegal immigrants, as long as they're not felons, rapists, and murderers, but they're pretty upset with their government, who cannot work together to stop an invasion by a caravan of people who are demanding to come into the country. So let's use the time we have left in Congress to go ahead and get the money and see what happens.
Mitch McConnell kind of runs a tight ship over there. Where is he?
Mitch McConnell's fine, but, you know, at the end of the day, if they don't give him $5 billion, he should insist they do, because it's a reasonable amount of money to continue progress on securing the border. But we do have control of the Congress till January the 3rd. You could, through reconciliation, pass money appropriated for border security as a standalone proposition. I don't like doing things like this, but I don't see an option to it if they don't work with us.
No, I agree with that wholeheartedly. I think you're right. I guess my biggest fear is that, you know, this opportunity is going to pass. Look, you're going to have a bigger majority in January for the Senate, but the House is never going to go along with it. So this is a short window that we have available here for us, correct?
January the 3rd. So, you know, I want to be home for Christmas and all that good stuff. And listen, it's not like I haven't tried to work with Democrats to fix a broken immigration system. But here's the frustration for a guy like me. You know, I've had my ass kicked trying to fix this problem. And Trump is right about the caravan. Because Trump says it doesn't mean it's wrong. He's right to stand up to the caravan and to draw a red line in the sand that we're not going to allow asylum laws to be abused anymore. You're not going to come to America, get released, and never show up for your hearing. You're going to stay on the Mexican side of the border. And to the mayor of Tijuana, if you ever listen to this program, you got a friend in Lindsey Graham, and I think Sean Hannity. It's the mayor of Tijuana, Mexico, that's the biggest advocate for why the caravan's not working.
You know, we pretty much know what is going to happen in the House next year. Democrats, they're going to be investigating. Nancy Pelosi said that their first bill is that President Trump must release his taxes. That's not going anywhere right in the U.S. Senate. So the president who campaigned for Marsha Blackburn and Governor Kemp elect in Georgia and DeSantis and Scott and, you know, helped defeat Claire McCaskill with Josh Hawley and helped defeat Joe Donnelly with Braun and helped defeat Heidi Heitkamp. That's now going to pay huge dividends for him having the Senate. You were very clear, if the Democrats go down the road of endless, nonstop investigation, you're all right with that because you're just going to do the same thing in the Senate. What do you mean by that specifically?
Well, let's just play this out. Okay, McCabe lied about matters that allowed him to be fired. Nobody has threatened to put him in jail to have him talk more about what he knows about the 25th Amendment and all that other stuff. So the zeal that Mueller has to break people to try to find out if they know more than they're telling us was never present during the FBI DOJ debacle. We never had a special counsel. So if you're going to spend all of your time in the House looking at 2016 and looking at Trump, I'm in charge of the Judiciary Committee. Ron Johnson's in charge of Homeland Security. We've got plenty of opportunity to look at McCabe, Comey, Lynch, all of these people about what they did with the FISA warrant and what they did about the Clinton email investigation.
What about Uranium One?
We'll all play it.
Well, I mean, I think you can start with, I think, the exoneration of Hillary. I mean, she clearly, with that mom and pop shop bathroom closet server of hers, violated the Espionage Act. Why do I think, Senator, that if I had subpoenaed emails and I deleted them and I cleaned my hard drive with bleach bit and I broke up my devices and I had to go before your committee, why do I think you guys would probably handcuff me right there and send me to jail for the rest of my life?
Well, number one, don't try this at home.
Yeah.
Try the turkey thing, but don't try the Clinton email thing.
So yeah, don't it's not going to work out. Well, how come it works out for her? How do you get to commit? You know, she paid for Russian lies that were disseminated to the American people. How many people
do that
didn't?
One.
You are.
So here's what I'm going to do. The FISA warrant process seems to have been abused, that the Democratic Party, along with Clinton, paid a foreign agent to collect information against President candidate Trump, foreign agent that was used to get a warrant, and none of the information is reliable. How could you get multiple warrants, much less one? If we don't find out what happened there, then we're letting the whole system down. So I'm going to look at that.
Senator, you wrote a memo with co-authored with Senator Grassley, and it's the Grassley Graham memo. I don't know why he got top billing. You need to talk about that. And I think that the bulk of information for the FISA warrants was the phony dossier. Isn't that a fraud committed on a FISA court, and they purposely didn't tell the court that she paid for it?
Sure. Well, where is the FISA court's outrage, number one? Number two, if there was a paid informant, a confidential informant used as a counterintelligence operation that was paid to talk to the Trump campaign about connections to Russia, what did the confidential informant find, and why wasn't that information used to get a warrant? So here's what I'm suggesting to you. That the confidential informant used by the FBI to look at the Trump campaign didn't find anything about Russia, because if he had, it would have been part of the warrant application to surveil Carter Page.
Well, I think you're right on all accounts, and the only thing that I might add is the Uranium One debacle. You know we had infiltrated Putin's network. You know that Hillary got the kickbacks to the Clinton Foundation. You know that Robert Mueller just happened to be the FBI director. And the FBI infiltrator was informing his bosses that bribery, extortion, money laundering, and kickbacks were going on, and they still approved that Uranium One deal, 20% of our uranium, you know, ending up really in Putin's hands.
Well,
and they knew everything. Go ahead.
I mean, what people in your program believe is that when it came to Clinton misconduct, there was really no zealous effort to find the truth. That the people investigating Clinton had it out for Trump and wanted her to win, that the FISA warrant was more political than it was legal, and that whole group got a pass, and that they're going after Trump like there's no tomorrow. And I don't know how you tell people that they're not right to believe that.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to let you go here, Senator. We do appreciate what you're doing. I think you're going to be working pretty hard next year. Hope you get some downtime over Christmas, and maybe we'll get that reconciliation bill first. That would be awesome and fund the wall. 800-941-SHAWN, toll-free telephone number. Hey, listen, I am telling you the best, most delicious, boldest, greatest blends of coffee come from one company, Black Rifle Coffee. You won't regret it. It's the best.
Sean Hannity.
You are listening to the best of the Sean Hannity Show.
Working every day to remember the forgotten man. This is the Sean Hannity Show.
This president that we have now is trying to unravel everything that he did and Obama did. And if I ever become a one-issue voter, it will be about pollution and the greenhouse effect. And
can
the
we
fact
focus
that,
on the president, please? I don't want to talk about Trump. We're honoring a great president.
Excuse me a second,
path.
Please. I want to talk about
but
the different...
honoring, but I'm not interested in your one issue.
I don't
voter
care what you're interested in. I'm talking.
Well, I don't care
you
what you're
what?
Interested
Damn
in
we'll
either,
be right back.
Boy.
We'll be right back after that little fight. Apparently, according to some news reports, I think it was page 6, it got really nasty behind the scenes. They actually were at each other's throats with names that we can't even use on this show legally. So, yeah, well, we love Republicans as people on the left just when they're dead. Camille Paglia is with us, back with us. Provocateur, iconoclast, and one of the more interesting people I've ever had the chance over the years to interview. How are you?
Hi, Sean. As a Democrat, okay, I'm embarrassed by the behavior of my party for the past few years since the election. For heaven's sakes, there was a duly elected president, and now it's incumbent on my party to clarify its agenda and find a strong candidate that can appeal from coast to coast. And there's all this endless, almost hallucinatory obsession, okay, with tearing the president down and thereby weakening the image of America in the world.
What is, in your view, I look at the Democratic agenda as almost singularly focused on destroying Donald Trump. We know where they stand. They want open borders. They want the crumbs back, the tax cuts that President Trump passed. And I don't hear any policies that I think would benefit the American people. I say the forgotten men and women that are struggling and out of work, in poverty, on food stamps, et cetera. And I think I don't see an agenda that's going to be one that's going to help make the country better.
No, it's like a cloud of hysterical emotionalism that's coming from, I think, this complete isolation and detachment of the educated elite and the urban media in the United States. I'm speaking as a professor of media studies. The self-destruction of journalism itself over the past few years is going to have a terrible effect in the long run on our democracy.
When the president says fake news, or I say fake news, or because I think a lot of it is fake, my analysis, and I can't really watch a whole lot of it, but we do for pure, I guess, entertainment and political purposes, pick out. But it seems like it's every second, every minute, every hour, every day. It's hate Trump. And without any exceptions on some of the cable networks.
Well, I've had to stop watching TV news completely.
Wait, Hannity's on at 9, Professor.
Right.
That's so not fair. What are you doing? What are you doing? I got to put food on the table, you know. You're killing me. What's that about? I thought we were friends.
Well, I used to watch the network news and CNN all the time, and now I tune in CNN for the hurricanes, and that's it, because it's absolutely unbearable. These people living in their bubble in Manhattan and Washington and Los Angeles. I teach in Philadelphia, but I live in the distant suburbs, and I try to observe actual social reality in the United States. All right, and I think that what's pouring out of the major media is absolute. What can I say? It's almost like the Spanish Inquisition. These people are twisted, truly mentally twisted people who are so focused, okay, on tearing down other people's beliefs, without presenting a coherent agenda of their own.
I really like conservatism, and I'm a conservative because I like the ideas that I believe, when implemented, work. Peace through strength works. Lower taxes, less burdensome regulation works. I can't really point to a left-wing policy that I can embrace and say, you know what, that's a great idea, that's going to help people, because all they've done is, frankly, created more dependency.
Yes, I voted for Bernie Sanders in the Democratic primaries last time around, but I'm well aware, okay, of the impracticality of the socialist proposals that are endorsed by particularly many of the younger now elected officials who appear to have no clear grasp on economics, okay, and how, in fact, a nation's wealth is generated. So I think there's just a kind of a lack of practical understanding. There's too much adherence to buzzwords and compassion as a general flag, instead of the GOP, at least, has a sense of the way economies actually work in the modern world.
See, I don't think the GOP really has it. I think Trump has it. I think a few Republicans have it. I think real conservatives have it. But I have more contempt for the Republican Party that, frankly, has just become a watered-down version of the Democratic Party. And the thing that I hate the most in life is I don't see courage. I don't see these people fighting and taking a stand. And they say one thing on the campaign trail, and they do something entirely different when they get in a position of power, and that frustrates me. I think health care was a great case in point. Obama's president, 65 times Republicans vote to repeal and replace. Then when it mattered, they're nowhere to be found.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, I was one of the few Democrats criticizing Obamacare before it was ever passed, trying to warn the party, don't be going down that road. Essentially, Nancy Pelosi even pulled out, a plan that had been in the drawer, for years, and was saying things like, we'll find out what's in it once it's passed, and so on. I mean, all of the problems in Obamacare, I think, were very, very clear way down the road.
Look, the promises weren't kept. Keep your doctor, your plan, save money. Uh-huh. Millions lost their doctors and plans. Now they have only one option and nobody saved any money. What do you think of, what are your observations about Donald Trump? I'll tell you, one thing that I do like about him is the world feigns, outrage at every word or tweet that he sends out there. I think it's selective and phony, and I think they're all pretending. I don't think we're a bunch of snowflakes that have not heard these words before or known people that are combative in our life before. I love that he fights, and when he's fighting for the American people, that's good. But what are your general thoughts about him, his presidency, and his enemies that want to remove him from office?
Well, he's a practical man of business who was brought in essentially from outside all of the party structures. So there has been a civil war going on inside the Republican Party as well as inside the Democratic Party for years now, and I think that he represents a wave. It's obvious. It's happened in Brazil. It's happening in Europe as well. Of the electorates are sick and tired of politics as usual and want someone to come in and deal with the problems themselves outside of ideology, okay? And that's essentially what he brings. That there's a kind of whatever chaos, the media are have been decrying in the Trump administration is coming from the fact that he was not a politician. He doesn't have a huge cadre of allies and supporters in the political establishment. So he's basically been feeling his way. I think the news media has failed spectacularly in its attacks on him since the election. Okay, because the more they attack him, the more they're driving the country away from themselves and toward Trump. That's what I see. I mean, if the economy continues strong, I've been saying, it seems to me no doubt that Trump will be reelected. I hope to vote for a Democrat, but they have to give me a nominee I can vote for and not a corrupt Hillary.
You wrote a piece about how Hillary wants Trump to win again.
Yes.
Why do you say that? And who would be the person you would most be inclined to, or most interested in hearing more about at this time?
Well, you can see by her behavior, by this hogging of the spotlight, that she's been doing, that she's been essentially cutting out, the legs from all the Democratic candidates who would like to build up a national profile. I mean, I think her behavior toward fellow Democrats has been absolutely appalling and classless. I had high hopes for Kamala Harris, but her behavior has certainly not been such, in the last year or so that I would believe she could draw votes from the broad midsection of the country. So I've been looking at candidates, possible candidates, like, for example, Governor Steve Bullock of Montana and also Congresswoman Sherry Bustos from Illinois. This is the kind of the kind of heartland manner, a warmth without the sarcasm and the sniping and the elitism that's so characteristic of an Elizabeth Warren, or of Kirsten Gillibrand. It's all over the map.
I find President Trump hilarious. Like, for example, I look at your writings and, a lot of times I'll laugh out loud. And I think I know you now well enough, I think, that I know that you like to push people's buttons and make them think. I can only imagine what you're like in the classroom. I frankly would love to sit in on a lecture and watch that endeavor unfold, because I'm assuming you're teaching a bunch of snowflakes and there's shock and awe of their precious little value system getting challenged. I've got to imagine that's a pretty interesting experience.
Well, I teach at a practical vocational art school, I don't have as many snowflakes as are pouring into the elite schools.
Well, but still, there's a little shock and awe. The best teachers I had a really great professor at Adelphi University when I went there a year, and he was a sociology guy, and he's just out of his mind. Okay, if you want me to say communism's great and I'll get an A. Okay, I understand the game. I can play that way. And or I can just stand up to you and say you're an idiot and I can't stand your stupid book that you're making us buy. And I'm wasting my time in this class. And then you suffer and you get the appropriate grade of daring to challenge the views of the professor.
Right. Well, my voice and my views are available to the public, and my new book is Provocations, okay, which is a collection of essays on a huge variety of things, from Hollywood to politics to my longstanding proposal that religion, comparative religion, be made the core curriculum of undergraduate education. I mean, as I believe that only by understanding the great world religions of the through history can people really hoped for any kind of multicultural understanding of Earth today.
Yeah. All right. Camille Paglia is with us. Her new book is called Provocations, a 700-page essay collection, including, well, her choiced satires of Hillary Clinton, all listed in the index. If you want to get a copy, we'll put it up on Hannity.com. I'll take a quick break. We'll come back, right back. We'll get to your calls, final half hour of the program today. 800-941-SHAWN is our number. You want to be a part of the program as we continue.
The final hour of the Sean Hannity Show is up next. Hang on for Sean's conservative solutions.
Camille Paglia is with us, her latest book, Provocations. All right, is humanity losing its sense of humor? Because I see we're losing our sense. I mean, don't you, when people make fun of me, right, which they do, I love it. I think it's the greatest form of flattery. I have people that I know in the business that I work in, radio and TV. Somebody says one bad thing about them, or Saturday Night Live mocks them, and they lose it. They bubble and fizz like Alka-Seltzer in water, and they can't handle it. Why is that?
Well, comedy was one of the great genres of American culture. I mean, one of the cultural heroes of my college years was Lenny Bruce, okay, who was arrested repeatedly for pushing the limits of comedy, live comedy, I regard humor as health. Okay, people who are humorless or who are thin-skinned, hypersensitive to the offensiveness of comedy and so on, they have a mental problem. And right now, unfortunately, our universities have institutionalized this state of neurotic hypersensitiveness.
You know, I don't know if you watch comedy shows or these specials like on HBO or maybe some of the older comedians like Richard Pryor was hilarious. I think Chris Rock is probably the most energetic, gifted storyteller, iconoclastic, tell it like it is comedian out there today. I've watched all these guys, and the more raw, the better for me. The more politically incorrect, the funnier they are. But there are a lot of comics that are afraid to go there because of where we are in society, and you can't say this, and you can't offend that one or that one.
Oh, so, absolutely. Yeah, the comedian depends on the sense of transgression. You have to have boundaries, and you have to violate. I am a believer in free thought and free speech, okay, and comedy should always be unfettered. We're in a very, very puritanical period right now that it's very dangerous, okay, because it invades the mind, it intrudes on the mind, it holds emotions hostage.
Were you worried the way Judge Kavanaugh was treated?
Oh, I thought it was absolutely appalling. Absolutely appalling. But the Democrats shot themselves in the foot. Okay, my good Lord. Okay, have you ever seen such an irrational? It was like the Salem witch trials. It really was.
All right, Camille Paglia, her book Provocation, 700-page essay, including her best work, is on Hannity.com, Amazon.com. Camille, good to talk to you. Have a
Thank you, Sean. Thank you so much.
Have a great vacation. I assume you're going on vacation, having a break.
All right. I never have a vacation, but happy holidays to you.
Okay, you too. Thank you. Hey, listen, sorry to spoil the surprise, but if you're going to get a gift from me this Christmas. Everybody's getting blackriflecoffee.com/Sean gift certificates. I'll tell you why. It is the best, greatest coffee experience you'll ever have. BlackRifleCoffee.com/Sean, 15% discount. We'll take a quick break on this Friday. We'll come back. We'll continue. And when we do, we have Jonathan Gillum and Maria Elvira and much more straight ahead. This is the best of the best. This is the Sean Hannity Show.